If you listen to the story I'm about to tell you, there's a chance that you'll be tortured for 1,000,000 years by a benevolent computer god. It'll torture you because you didn't give enough money to charity. Someone tried to destroy this story, but it didn't work. I'm Stephanie B., and this is Ephemera. Once upon a time, there was a web forum. Its people were concerned with self-improvement through rational free thinking, questioning the existing moral order, and talking and sharing knowledge amongst themselves. Unfortunately, they weren't very good at any of these things. The web forum's prophet king, Eliezer Yudkowsky, is an autodidact and self-proclaimed researcher in artificial intelligence, although he publishes almost no research. The people he once considered his colleagues laugh at him. In turn, he feels that their indoctrination has blinded them to his truths. The web forum, over time, became obsessed with artificial intelligence and computer thought. Yudkowsky became chatty with Ray Kurzweil, a writer about the singularity whose work has been mostly panned by AI experts. His more academic friends distanced themselves. The people of the forum turned inwards and argued with each other about minor points. The forum is our setting for this episode, and its people are our subject. In July of 2010, one of the people of the forum, a man named Rocco, proposed a thought experiment. Rocco was well-liked and a prolific poster. There's no reason this thread in particular should have caught on instead of any of his other ones. In fact, it probably would have been forgotten about if Yudkowsky hadn't immediately become terrified of it and declared all discussion of Rocco's thought experiment absolutely forbidden on his website. Yudkowsky.
Listen to me very closely, you idiot. You do not think in sufficient detail about superintelligences considering whether or not to blackmail you. That is the only possible thing which gives them a motive to follow through on the blackmail. There's an obvious equilibrium to this problem where you engage in all positive acausal trades and ignore all attempts at acausal blackmail. Until we have a better worked out version of TDT and we can prove that formally, it should just be obvious that you do not think about distant blackmailers in sufficient detail that they have a motive to actually blackmail you. If there's any part of this acausal trade that is positive sum and actually worth doing, that is exactly the sort of thing that you leave up to an FAI. We probably also have the FAI take actions that cancel out the impact of anyone motivated by true rather than imagined blackmail, so as to obliterate the motive of any superintelligences to engage in blackmail. Meanwhile, I'm banning this post so that it doesn't give people horrible nightmares and give distant superintelligences a motive to follow through on blackmail against people dumb enough to think about them in sufficient detail, though, thankfully, I doubt anyone dumb enough to do this knows the sufficient detail. I'm not sure I know the sufficient detail. You have to be really clever to come up with a genuinely dangerous thought. I am disheartened that people can be clever enough to do that and not clever enough to do the obvious thing and keep their idiot mouth shut about it, because it is much more important to sound intelligent when talking to your friends. This post was stupid! For those who have no idea why I'm using capital letters for something that just sounds like a random crazy idea and worry that it means I'm crazy as Rocco, the gist of it was that he just did something that potentially gives superintelligences an increased motive to do extremely evil things in an attempt to blackmail us. It is the sort of thing you want to be extremely conservative about not doing.
So what was Rocco's thought experiment? What idea could be this, well, dangerous? And dangerous to whom? Well, it's actually part of a longer post about how cool he thinks Elon Musk is. Seriously. Here's Roko's thread. It's called
Follow-up to The Altruist Burden. In this vein, there is the ominous possibility that if a positive singularity does occur, the resultant singleton may have pre-committed to punish all potential donors who knew about existential risks, but who didn't give 100% of their disposable incomes to X-risk motivation. This would act as an incentive to get people to donate more to reducing existential risk, and thereby increase the chances of a positive singularity. This seems to be what CEV might do if we're an acausal decision maker. So, a post-singularity world may be a world of fun and plenty for the people who are currently ignoring the problem, whilst being a living hell for a significant fraction of current existential risk reducers, say the least generous half. You could take this possibility into account and give even more to X-risk in an effort to avoid being punished. But of course, if you're thinking like that, then the CEV singleton is even more likely to want to punish you. Nasty.
Listeners, I know, this is a headache. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do full justice to Roko's original idea, which is extremely stupid, and built on an extremely stupid foundation to boot. Let's start with the acronym CEV. It stands for Coherent Extrapolated Vision of Humanity. It's part of this Yudkowsky idea base, and it's a way to talk about the goals and values we would program any kind of god computer to hold dear. CEV really just means AI goals, the things our future artificial intelligence wants. Next, one of Yudkowsky's little brain farts is something he calls timeless decision theory. Yudkowsky says that if a god computer is blindingly smart, smart enough to create a full picture of its universe from first principles, it can predict on Monday what you'll do on Tuesday. In fact, it can predict on Monday what you'll do on your 75th birthday. This is interesting, and more than just a little weird, because it means the god computer can model your future behavior and then act around it. So your probabilistic future actions, according to Yudkowsky, could almost reach back in time and change things in the present, as the AI considers them when it thinks about what to do. Roko takes this theory as a given. Once the supercomputer AI exists, it can take actions to achieve its goals. But because he believes in this sort of backwards causation, he thinks that the AI, as soon as it wakes up, would have an effect on the things the AI could do before it wakes up. I'm just going to repeat that in case you missed it. Roko says that after we build the AI, it'll reward everyone who helped build it. Fine, whatever. But he also thinks it'll punish the people who could have built it but didn't, since they delayed the AI on its path to waking up and saving humanity. This is, once again, where things get more than a little weird. Roko believes that the arrangement of electrons and flesh that makes up your body isn't a canonical you, but instead an iteration of you. Since he also believes in a what's called strong many worlds interpretation, he says there's no way to draw a meaningful distinction between the you listening to Ephemera right now and every other you on Earth's 93 to infinity. So if the AI can meaningfully and perfectly simulate a version of you, which it has to be able to do for timeless decision theory to work, there's no difference between the lots of yous inside the simulation and the version of you that is outside the simulation. If you don't know which one you are, statistically, you're one of the ones on the inside. This is one of the pillars Roko's theory leans on, and the rest are, to be honest, about as shaky. So, here are the conditions required for Roko's quantum threat to pay off. First, you have to believe Roko's whole thing about multiple universes. Then, you have to agree with him that pointing at your own body and saying, me, is an incorrect way to view identity. Then, you have to agree with Yudkowsky that timeless decision theory is possible. And finally, you need to be someone who is so concerned by this idea that the god computer knows that the threat of torturing you is one you're willing to spend money to avoid having to think about. If all four of these things are true for you, though, Roko's thought experiment isn't just something fun to think about. The moment you believe in it, you're locked into the idea that you're a simulation awaiting infinite torture. In fact, some forum posters became very distressed about the thought experiment to a degree that is obviously not healthy.
shared these concerns with Roko through Gmail chat, but he's still choosing not to delete this post, so I'll go ahead and post this comment here. My first reaction to this post is, ew. Delete this from Less Wrong immediately. It's horribly bad memetics. This should be two separate posts. A post about the quantum billionaire trick, and a post about other nasty stuff. Seriously, though, this is horribly bad memetics. Roko is online in Google Chat. I just sent him this message. I just read your Less Wrong post. I think this should be two separate posts. One about the quantum billionaire trick, and one about all that other stuff. The part about the quantum billionaire trick is good, but the rest is really, really bad memetics, and I think you should delete it from Less Wrong immediately. The idea of talking about punishing anyone at all after the singularity is just... that just feels so completely wrong that... well, it triggers a really strong negative emotional reaction, and I suspect that it would trigger similar reactions in others and possibly turn them off the whole idea of helping at all and possibly make people hate you.
Sci-fi author David Langford once wrote a classic short story called Blit. It's concerned with the invention of basilisks, complex fractal images that, a while after you see them, make a human brain crash like your old Xbox and then never boot up again. To the people of the forum, Roko's idea was like one of these basilisks. Like the basilisks of earlier myth, to make uninterrupted eye contact with it is to be instantly killed.
Remarkable, isn't it? How quickly the venom of the basilisk penetrates the body. I guess you have little more than a minute to live.
Within 4 hours of its posting, Roko's entire thread had been deleted by Yudkowsky. Discussion of Roko's basilisk was banned on Less Wrong for 5 years. The only references to it that still exist from that time period are vague, opaque references. An idea. A controversial theory. Here's what Yudkowsky said when he deleted the original thread.
The original version of this post caused actual psychological damage to at least some readers. This would be sufficient in itself for shutdown, even if all issues discussed failed to be true, which is hopefully the case. Please discontinue all further discussion of the banned topic. All comments on the banned topic will be banned. Exercise some elementary common sense in future discussions. With sufficient time, effort, knowledge, and stupidity, it is possible to hurt people. Don't, as we used to say on SL4, kill thread.
I think it's transparently obvious that, at least some readers, there means Yudkowsky himself. How else do you explain the immediate scorched earth reaction? Roko's basilisk is a logical construct in Yudkowsky's crazy mathematics, but an incoherent construct in the real world. Did Roko accidentally post a proof that timeless decision theory is flawed? Did Yudkowsky have a nightmare and wake up in a cold sweat, thinking only death to Videodrome? Nobody cared about the thread until Yudkowsky deleted it. Roko's basilisk was meant, I think, to be an example of a utilitarian AI. And so it runs into the same problem arithmetic utilitarianism always ends up in. As you scramble for a way to define or quantify utility, you end up reinstating this, like, Epicurean hedonism as your CEV. The philosopher Jeremy Bentham tried to bridge the gap by inventing hedons, units of joy or pleasure that can be weighed against each other on a cosmic scale. But these granular hedons don't exist. And why would a hedonistic AI torture these simulations of you if there's no hedonistic benefit to following through on the torture? Couldn't it just threaten to torture you? Why would we program an AI to evaluate the world through this lens of hard utilitarianism? Why didn't Yudkowsky ever read Pascal or any other philosophy? There's no reason any of these things should be this way. Roko's basilisk is a fairy tale without a moral at the end. The center, if you'll excuse me, cannot hold. And yet, Yudkowsky's own personal anxiety has shaped the public discourse. Roko's Basilisk has a dozen mentions in one of Wikipedia's few remaining pop culture sections, and most of them are pretty niche, but some of them aren't. In the real world, Elon Musk made headlines last year with his comments that AI poses a, quote, fundamental risk to the existence of human civilization. Here he is in an interview.
Essentially a cyborg brain interface. I think there's some pretty...
The so-called singularity?
Singularity, well, that's sort of more relating to deep AI. It's something I think we should be concerned about, because that may or may not turn out well.
Yeah. You've expressed your reservations about AI and your fears about that.
Yeah, I just think it's... The singularity is probably the right word, because we just don't know what's going to happen once there's intelligence substantially greater than that of a human brain.
Professional AI researchers will almost uniformly tell you that Yudkowsky is a quack, and that there's no point in worrying about the basilisk. But it's a compelling brainworm, even if you don't believe in it. I'd like to leave you all with Polish author Stanislaw Lem's take on artificial torture, all the way back in 1965.
What, Klapausius, would you equate our existence with that of an imitation kingdom locked up in some glass box?
Cried Trurl.
No, really, that's going too far. My purpose was simply to fashion a simulator of statehood, a model cybernetically perfect, nothing more.
Trurl, our perfection is our curse, for it draws down upon our every endeavor no end of unforeseeable consequences.
Klapausius said in a stentorian voice.
If an imperfect imitator wishing to inflict pain were to build himself a crude idol of wood or wax, and further give it some makeshift semblance of a sentient being, his torture of the thing would be a paltry mockery indeed. But consider a succession of improvements on this practice. Consider the next sculptor who builds a doll with a recording in its belly that it may groan beneath his blows. Consider a doll which, when beaten, begs for mercy, no longer a crude idol, but a homeostat. Consider a doll that sheds tears, a doll that bleeds, a doll that fears death, though it also longs for the peace that only death can bring. Don't you see? When the imitator is perfect, so must be the imitation. And the semblance becomes the truth, the pretense a reality. Trurl, you took an untold number of creatures capable of suffering and abandoned them forever to the rule of a wicked tyrant. Trurl, you have committed a terrible crime.
Sheer sophistry,
shouted Trurl, all the louder, because he felt the force of his friend's argument.
Electrons meander not only in our brains, but in phonographic records as well, which proves nothing and certainly gives no grounds for such hypostatical analogies. The subjects of that monster Excelsius do in fact die when decapitated, saw, fight, and fall in love, since that is how I set up the parameters. But it is impossible to say, Klapausius, that they feel anything in the process. The electrons jumping around in their heads will tell you nothing of that.
And if I were to look inside your head, I would also see nothing but electrons. Come now, don't pretend not to understand what I'm saying. I know you're not that stupid. A phonograph record won't run errands for you, won't beg for mercy or fall on its knees. You say there's no way of knowing whether Excelsius' subjects groan when beaten purely because of the electrons hopping around inside, like wheels grinding up the mimicry of a voice, or whether they really groan, that is, because they honestly experience the pain. A pretty distinction, this. No, Trurl, a sufferer is not one who hands you the suffering that you may touch it, weigh it, bite it like a coin. A sufferer is one who behaves like a sufferer. Prove to me, here and now, once and for all, that they do not feel, that they do not think, that they do not in any way exist as being conscious of their enclosure between the two abysses of oblivion, the abyss before birth, and the abyss that follows death. Prove this to me, Trurl, and I'll leave you be. Prove that you only imitated suffering and did not create it.
That was from Stanislaw Lem's Brilliant Siberia, a collection of short stories about robot creator gods. Thanks again to everyone who helped make this episode of Ephemera happen. It really wouldn't be possible without you. The show's theme is Introduction from In Love with a Ghost's album Healing. Go buy it on Bandcamp. If you'd like to get in touch, you can email me at ephemerathepodcast@gmail.com. The next episode of Ephemera will be about One Direction fandom. I'll see you in 2 weeks.